wolf on the hill is never as hungry as the wolf climbing the hill.
Lone wolf is a term commonly used by many people. It means that they used to belong to a group, but left, to become stronger. By thinking and acting alone, the lone wolf acquires superior cunning, agility, imagination and skills unknown to members of the pack. The lone wolf is independent of and distances itself from the petty bickerings, expectations, demands, mediocrities and unfulfilled dreams of other people, groups or organizations. The lone wolf is often branded as the rebel.
For it is the sovereign lone wolf who stands alone in all of his or her glory. You are listening to Lone Wolf Radio, presented and hosted by Tom Metzger. Tom is now broadcasting from a newly relocated and improved bunker in an undisclosed location with internet access across the globe. So sit back, relax, and enjoy another episode on Lone Wolf Radio.
And in the meantime, send your donations and your letters to Tom Metzger, 1281. State Street, number 114, San Jacinto, California, 92583. San Jacinto is spelled S-A-N-J-A-C-I-N-T-O, and we'll be happy to receive your mail. Yeah. Now, that address will be good for approximately 30 days, but we have created another one, which is Tom Metzger, P.O. Box 1687, 1687, and that's 315 East Esplanade, E-S-P-L-A-N-A-D-E Avenue, San Jacinto, California, 92581. And hopefully we'll get settled down here after a while. But like I say, that other one address is still good. But transfer as soon as possible to the one I just gave you. Boy, this screwed up State Department and military industrial complex is really one clusterfuck, I'm telling you. This latest deal with Qatar, that these other guys are, you know, Saudi Arabia, probably the most criminal Arab government, Islamic so-called government in the Middle East, is dogpiling Qatar, and along with a couple of more of those countries, and Trump walked right into the middle of it. See, we have our, I think it's the 7th fleet. The total operation is based in Qatar. Now here we are attacking Qatar, or all our wonderful Islamic allies are attacking Qatar. How fucked up can you get? They can't, those guys in Washington, they can't do anything right. And Trump, he can't do anything right either. Well, maybe once in a while he accidentally does something right, but it's something else. I hope you weren't out celebrating D-Day yesterday, because D-Day is just another fratricidal whites killing whites primarily in a bloodbath, in a war that never needed to happen, could have been avoided. Of course, all wars can be avoided, but they'll claim, oh, well, we couldn't do anything else. We had to go thousands of miles away and fight our German brethren. if we hadn't done that, Hitler might have turned Europe into a united Europe. Oh, man, it's so screwed up. It's unbelievable. Like I say, my uncle was at D-Day, and he was in the battle there in the Battle of the Bulge. He told me some stories. Not as many as... I had another friend that was in the Battle of the Bulge and told me how they would be walking along and see German soldiers mutilated with their fingers cut off to get their jewelry and everything else. But he never witnessed any American GI being mutilated or having their fingers cut off or anything like that. It might have happened, but he never saw it. Just remember, every war we've fought as a country has been an anti-white war, including the Revolution, whites killing whites, even hiring Mongoloid Indians to kill whites on both sides, the French and the English. We've been killing each other for a long time. Never got the message. What's it all about? Well, killing off the white people. That's the long-range plan, no matter what you think.
Media platforms have acted since. So the problem that we have today is no longer one of jihadists being on Facebook and Twitter. They are no longer there. They are in private messaging services like Telegram, which are end-to-end encrypted and which are much more difficult to regulate. Peter, how do the U.S., or I should say the U.K. intelligence agencies get their arms around such a sizable population of people that they're already concerned about? I've heard numbers as large as 3,000 people who are actively engaged in the ideology, maybe 20,000 more people post 9/11 that they've had their eyes on. Over the past 5 or 6 years, the numbers of people who are supposed to be involved in violent extremism have, in some cases, quadrupled, and the capacity of many security agencies is no longer sufficient to monitor and to manage them. So the greater the numbers are, in Britain, for example, 3,000 people who are considered to be potentially violent extremists, the greater the and the more difficult the judgment calls, who do you monitor?
Sorry you got cut off there, but I can't believe the interviews these people do, like from England or France and all over, when they get people all blown up all over the place. They must be insane. They must be lacking some brain cells. They bring them in to the country. They flood their country for the good of the industrial class, of course, the ruling class. That's what it is. Of course, the industrial class never admits that they've screwed up, because we just brought them in to work and to keep the wages down and cause white people to lose their jobs. That's all we brought them in for, and now they're blowing up the country. It's insane. It's absolutely insane. Just like celebrating D-Day, whites in massive numbers killing whites in massive numbers, and mostly working class whites. You see how insane all this is? And the refusal of British cops to have guns on the beat? That's ridiculous, too. Taking on a guerrilla fighter with a baton? Amazing. None of this is common sense. There is no common sense left in the world. Remember after fratricidal World War II? So many thousands of German men were killed off, and women and children. What did they do? The industrial people said, oh, well, we have no workers. We're going to have to bring non-white Turks in. Yeah, we'll flood the country with non-white Turks, and then we'll build nice cars, and everybody will be happy, and everybody will be making money. Yeah. How's that working out? You end up with an Angela Merkel, the bitch, I wouldn't say from Buchenwald, but the bitch from East Germany, who was a card-carrying commie most of her life. Nobody talks about that, but if she wasn't a card-carrying communist, she was educated in communist schools and the whole bit. Here she is fucking up Germany, bringing millions of people into Germany. That was the most obscene war crime I've seen since World War II, is Merkel opening the gates up for all these people. I would label Merkel the prime war criminal of this century so far. There's going to be more of them, but she's the one I pick out as the worst so far in this century. But the way they get away with this is that people are so damn dumb, with no common sense. They may be intelligent about other things, building a Volkswagen car or something, or a Mercedes-Benz car, even though they're getting cheaper than hell too. Trying to figure out logical, simple things, the working class has become total nutcases. They vote for these people over and over again. I mean, and the people they should vote for, of course, the democratic method is stupid anyhow. It didn't even work for the Greeks. So democracy is a sham. It always was. And it's really become one now, in which it's not really democracy at all now. It's just some kind of a capitalist mixture of socialist, capitalist, and so forth. So it's not really anything but anti-white. And when we absorb Mexico, we become Mexico. Actually, we become worse than Mexico, because there's a lot of things, if left alone, would be okay in Mexico. They would never be a European nation. They never would be out front on technology and so forth, unless they import people to do it. But look at her streets and cities. We're becoming Mexico. And people always said, oh, Mexico's a terrible place. All kinds of crap and drug cartels and everything. But that's okay. They can come up here. You can't fix stupid except by some kind of cataclysmic violence or something. I don't know. We'll have to see how that goes. Technically, the right wing is just as stupid as the left wing for different reasons. Both of them are off the tracks, off the rails, because neither one appreciate and respect the idea of race and tribalism and so forth. If you don't respect that, you can't get anything done. You've got to have a race that sticks together. The Jews aren't even a race. And on important things, they do stick together, even if it's just for the money. If you're a British cop or a German cop, or anybody else over there that's a cop, and you don't demand to take your gun to town on the job, have a gun on you, you got to be absolutely nuts. These British bobbies walking around with just a stick? Jeez, I guess out of stupidity, they deserve what they get. I've got a good job for the Irish. They're good at this stuff. Start smuggling guns into Britain for the people to use to defend themselves. Yeah, you can do it. You've done it before. You've done it with the IRA, so why don't you do something good, Mr. Irishman, and smuggle guns into the people of England to defend themselves? And when one of these guys gets in your sights, he's one in the head, one in the heart. Don't ever let them be alive. Don't ever try to capture them alive. Kill them. On the other hand, you do know that your military-industrial complex has caused all this in the first place. I mean, the fact of occupying and destroying countries and killing their leaders tends to cause things like this. Oh, you never thought of that? Duh! Dumbass! dumb ass. That's just like they said in Vietnam. We're going to bomb the village to save the village. Yeah, we're going to destroy the village to save the village. Huh. You bomb things, you don't save anything. Nothing. All those cities over there have been totally destroyed, the Middle East. And all their people take to the streets and take to the highways and get out of there. What do you expect them to do? So it's such a screwed up mess that it's, I don't know, it may take 100 years to get out of it, if we get out of it. I don't know. I think it's just going to be more or less a downward spiral. I don't see anything positive because the leaders are all psychopaths. They're all nuts. These leaders are psychopaths. No matter how intelligent they sound, no matter how educated they are, they're nuts. And they're a stupid form of intelligence. Yeah, they can be intelligent about a lot of things, about the language and all that kind of stuff, but about day-to-day stuff, they're stupid. Just like Einstein, he couldn't make change for the trolley. Well, I'm right on the front lines now, a little more on the front lines than I was in Indiana, but Indiana's going to hell in a handbag too, the whole Middle West, because people have no defense against the invaders. They won't put up a fight, they just want to make them Christians. Yeah, I don't care if all you non-whites come into my community, just as long as you become a good Christian boy and wait for the baby Jesus to come. Come on in. I'd rather be out here where the fight is more out in the open. More really, out there. I think that I feel better about things. I can be surrounded by non-whites as long as I know what the story is, and there's a lot of other people know what the story is, and everybody's walking around carrying a big hidden stick under their shirt. Also, I can fight for the white race and don't have to freeze to death. Of course, the news out of Chicago, which was only a 2-hour drive for me in Indiana, is enough to gag a maggot. I'm telling you, Chicago, I don't think they could solve Chicago's problem if they sent in the army to Chicago, because they'd be afraid of who they shoot and so forth. And half of the troops would be black anyhow, and they'd probably get to the point where they'd refuse to shoot black people, no matter how bestial they act. So that's another thing, your race-mixed military. That was one of the big genius ideas of our enemies, to race-mix the military, make it so it loses its power and under fire will maybe refuse to even go to battle. Yeah, I hope you realize that the global warming fiasco that took place over in Europe in their big meeting, what they don't tell you is the United States is going to pay all the money. These other countries are not going to pay a dime, including Russia, including China. They're not going to pay a dime for that stuff. Only the U.S. is going to pay. So that's another big reason not to go for it and not to pass it. So whether by accident or not, Trump did the right thing there. Well, the meme is known as the Happy Merchant, unquote, and depicts a hook-nosed Jew in a yarmulke rubbing his hands together. BuzzFeed has called the character the Internet's favorite anti-Semitic image, unquote. And I must say that that was a character that my cartoonist, A. Wyatt Man, drew 25 years ago, when he drew all those cartoons for our war paper. So our war symbol of the Jew has gone worldwide and everybody's using it now. Of course, the right wing used it very frequently without giving credit to war. But that's all right. We're just glad that it gets out there. And just so you know, our people created it, along with hundreds of other critical of Jew cartoons. I guess it's time for us to break them out again. We took them off the website for a while. I think it's time to bring them out again. What do we got to lose? Trying to change the minds of these idiots? That's like the Klan spending all that money on printing to toss leaflets on people's front yard. What a waste of time. Well, it says Al Jazeera did not respond to a request for comment on that cartoon. That's interesting. Well, here's another deal to show you how the Jews burrow in. Trump rewards Lee Zeldin's loyalty with a dinner invitation. Huh. As he prepares for the former FBI Director James Comey's Senate testimony tomorrow, President Trump took some time Tuesday evening to host a select group of Republican lawmakers for a private White House dinner. He operates a little bit like Stalin did. He had Jews on the right of him he liked or he used, and Jews on the left of him that he did not, and he had them killed. The group included two senators who will be among those questioning Comey at the Senate Intelligence Committee and several others not involved, including Lee Zeldin, the New York Republican, who is one of the only two Jewish members of Congress. Oh, he's a good boy. What made Zeldin win a seat around the president's dinner table? It could be his loyalty to President Trump. An analysis prepared by 538, whatever that is, found that Zeldin's vote 96.7% of the time with Trump's position. You see how part of the Jews go one way and part of the Jews go the other way, but the main thing is they get power. In fact, the only vote on which he broke with the president was on legislation lowering internet privacy requirements. Democrats have targeted Zeldin's seat as a possible flip in the 2018 midterms and have been increasing pressure following him vote in favor of repealing Obamacare. Well, it won't make any difference which way you go in 2018. Oh yeah, it may make some differences, but this is the way the Jews play the game. They don't want to control the whole side. They don't want to control the whole right wing or the whole left wing. They always want people on both sides in power. That's the way they operate. So, Florida woman who believed the 2012 massacre at Connecticut Elementary School was a hoax was sentenced to 5 months in federal prison on Wednesday after pleading guilty to the threatening of a parent of one of the children killed. Prosecutors accused the hoaxer, Richards, 57, of saying that she would kill a parent of a Sandy Hook Elementary School victim, telling the parent, "You're going to die. Death is coming to you real soon." Richards of the Tampa area pleaded guilty in Fort Lauderdale to one count. To one count of transmitting threats via interstate commerce. There's that interstate commerce clause. That is, if you thought other things cost you your freedom, interstate commerce costs you more freedom than any other law in the country. But most people don't realize that. To one count of transmitting threats via interstate commerce in January 2016, according to a statement from acting U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of Florida, the Goon Squad. The parent was not named in the statement, but previous reports identified him as Lenny Posner, the father of Noah Posner, a Jewish child killed in the rampage. Richards' belief that the school shooting was a hoax, never happened, motivated her to make the threats, prosecutors said. Well, if she didn't have the method to do it, and she didn't plan to do it, she didn't set up a plan to kill the guy, this is bullshit. You know, people say that stuff all the time. Go into any bar in the country, you'll hear death threats all the time. They just want to use that as persecution for somebody who's probably dumb about making a threat like that. and having no way of pulling it off, the attack at Sandy Hook in Newton, Connecticut on December 14, 2012 was one of the deadliest school shootings in U.S. history. Well, blame it on the mother who provided her kid with all the guns even though he was a psycho. That's the way it goes. Interesting on these Google updates, you can put all these different names down and it'll come up with their name, and usually it's something negative. Well, when you put Jew crime down, it usually doesn't come up with crimes committed by Jews at all. It still comes up with anti-Semitism. That's funny. I've had that Jew crime label on for 2 or 3 years, and I've never seen yet a crime attributed to the Jew. It's always a crime attributed to someone who's after a Jew. Author and practicing human rights attorney Daniel Kovalik contended that current perceptions of Russia are incorrect and have been manipulated by some sectors of the U.S. government and mainstream media in order to justify continued American intervention abroad and occupation. There is a hysteria about Russia in the U.S., which even preceded the 2016 U.S. election. He remarked it has led to new Cold War, potentially more dangerous than the first. Kovalik finds this rhetoric unjustified. Quote, "I don't see Russia as an enemy. I see them as a potential ally," unquote. "Even with all the faults of Putin," he commented. There's a book that you might find interesting. I'm going to play you some of this interview, not the whole thing, because I think it's about 2 hours.
The scapegoat Russia. We'll find out more from Dan Kovalik next on Coast to Coast. A senior associate general counsel of the United Steelworkers, AFL-CIO Union. He has worked for the USW since graduating from Columbia Law School back in 1993. And while with the USW, he has served as a lead counsel on cutting-edge labor law litigation, including some landmark cases as well. His book is called The Plot to Scapegoat Russia, which is an interesting thought all by itself. Dan, welcome to Coast to Coast.
Thanks for having me on, George. I'm a big fan.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to this. Isn't the United Steelworkers Union, isn't that the largest union now in the United States?
It's the largest industrial union. That is correct.
Man, I'm glad there are members. I thought steel and everything else went away from this country.
Yeah, well, we still have steel workers. And by the way, my opinion's reflected in my book, and I'm not sure on my own, and not the unions.
Right, I understand that.
But to talk about the union, through a bunch of mergers, we also represent paper workers, rubber workers, oil workers, nurses, teachers. So we have a lot of different sectors, but steel also.
Dan, let's get into the title of the book, The Plot to Scapegoat Russia, and why you wrote it, first of all. And then I'm going to ask you a question that some people have emailed me and said, oh, you're having a Russian apologist on. I don't think you are. I wanted you to answer that first. Are you a Russian apologist?
No, and in fact, well, and it's funny you ask that, because I talk about that in my book. I mean, that's one of the first things I say, that I don't view myself as a Russian apologist. Of course, people will reach their own conclusions on that. And that's not the purpose of my book. The book grew out of an article I wrote, actually, on Huffington Post. The title was "Listen, Liberals, Russia is Not Our Enemy." And I was addressing liberals. Most people would consider me liberal or, you know, left of center. And my whole purpose of writing it was that I think, and by the way, one of the commentators you had before me, I mean, really said a lot of it. I mean, I think there's this hysteria around Russia right now. And by the way, I believe it precedes even the 2016 election cycle. I was writing about this a couple years ago even, because this hysteria about Russia has been increasing over recent years. And to put a finer point on it, this hysteria is dangerous.
Well, it really is. Look, I was 12 years old during the Cuban Missile Crisis, 12 years old. But I remember the tension on my parents' faces. I remember President John F. Kennedy at the time coming on nationally, showing pictures of where the missiles were and saying that we had to stop this and everything else. And those were scary times. I mean, even in grade school, Dan, they were doing, you know, atomic bomb drills. They had us hiding under desks. Big deal, right? But that was a very tense time, and I'm beginning to feel that we're going right back into that feeling again.
Well, exactly, and in fact, you're not alone in that. As I mentioned in my book, the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists, the ones that keep that nuclear clock.
They make that clock,
to nuclear war. They have moved the clock to 3 minutes to midnight. Now, showing how close we are to a possible nuclear confrontation, it's the closest we've been, in their view, since 1953. And again, this isn't something that in itself is not focused on a lot. But that is very concerning, and that is why I wrote the book. We are headed towards a possible confrontation with Russia, not necessarily because we want to, but we may end up there because we continue to push the envelope in terms of our rhetoric against them and our actions against them, which in the end I do believe are unjustified. I don't see Russia as an enemy. I see them as a potential ally for all the faults of Putin, and I acknowledge those. But if you look at other allies, you know, you look at Saudi Arabia, for example. We just sold $110 billion of military hardware to them. You know, you could say a lot worse about that government.
Sure.
Yet it doesn't stop us from being an ally, right? I mean, I think, well, I'll give you an example. Just to remind folks that after 9/11, the first world leader to call George W. Bush to offer condolences was Vladimir Putin.
That's right. Exactly right.
And
he was sincere. He was sincere in doing that.
In fact, he said, I'll help you in an operation in Afghanistan, if that's what you do. And he did help. No one disputes that he provided critical help. As you know, the Soviets had been in Afghanistan. They still had assets there. They had a base nearby Afghanistan. And they offered and they gave us help in that operation. So it wasn't just lip service, right? And in fact, you might remember the quote from George W. Bush. He said, I looked into Putin's eyes and I saw his soul, and he considered Putin a friend. You know, so, you know, and it seems to me that we've given up a friend and ally unnecessarily through a different, you know, for various reasons. And now I believe because of political expediency, mostly on the part of the Democrats, you know, they're using the Russiagate scandal, you know, for political gain. But it has very, very potentially dangerous consequences, which concern me quite a bit.
Well, me too. And, you know, I'm going to get into the hacking. I want to get your reaction to some of that and what they may or may not have done. But what is wrong with a candidate who wants to be president to meet with foreign leaders of countries that we are friends with or not friends with to try to make things better, as opposed to the tension, again, of what we went through during the Cold War? I don't see anything wrong with that. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, Trump should have met with the Iranians and with that whack job in North Korea.
Thanks, George. I agree with you entirely. And by the way, every incoming president and presidential team does that. During the transition period, you know, between the election and an inauguration, every transition team starts to meet with world leaders, and you want them to do that. You don't want them to come in January 20th flat-footed on these important issues. You meet with ambassadors like the ambassador from Russia. That's who Mike Flynn met with. Many people have met with that ambassador, including Nancy Pelosi. There's photos of her with him. That's not a crime. That's what ambassadors are for. You know, that they get paid to meet with people and build relationships. You know, this whole thing that everyone who met with Sergey Kislyak is somehow tainted. I guess Jeff Sessions, they're saying, again, Mike Flynn. It's insane. I mean, you've never heard of that before. And yet it just seems like the media is buying that hook, line, and sinker.
I know. They're not asking the question I just asked and brought up, and that is, would you rather have peace with your so-called enemies, or would you rather have this conflict going on and on? And again, I see nothing wrong with candidates meeting. Look what the Reagan administration did prior to their election in terms of trying to get the hostages released from Iran. I mean, you talk about meddling. That was far more meddling than what was going on here.
Well, indeed. And in fact, you know, and I mentioned this in my book, which the plot to scapegoat Russia, that, you know, there's some evidence, as you know, you might remember the so-called October surprise.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, that Reagan may have even had the hostages held longer, you know, until his inauguration to help him get elected, which, of course, would be much worse than we're talking about
exactly now.
But again, you know, we can point to other things. Kissinger was meeting with the Vietnamese before Nixon was elected, and dealing with the peace accords there. I mean, this is just very common. And again, to now make this a big deal, and again, it all is based on I think the wrong assumption that somehow the Russians are this unique evil force in the world, you know, that they're somehow radioactive, and it's just the facts don't support that. And I'm very concerned about the road that we're heading on this issue.
All right, well, hold on.
Well, there you go. That's part of a two-hour interview about actually, it's coming from the media and the press, the media and the Democrat Party that are brewing all this anti-Russian stuff up. But I know behind the scenes there's military-industrial complex people on the right and the Republicans, too, pushing it. It's a dirty, dangerous deal. But that's what happens when you have psychopath, crazy people running your government. Well, we finally got a reliable source for a Bigfoot sighting. Yeah, very reliable. One of the stars of VH1 reality show Basketball Wives claims she once encountered Bigfoot and spoke to the creature via telepathy. During a taping of the program, Jackie Christie, wife of former NBA star Doug Christie, recounted the experience in vivid detail. I'm not sure, is he white or black? Sounds like he might be white. According to Christie, who grew up in the Pacific Northwest, the bizarre incident occurred when she and her best friend and her mother were driving down the highway and the legendary creature suddenly stepped in front of their car. Well, finally, we got reliable, legitimate, sane evidence. Or not. Well, I know we got some cat people in the audience out there. I know one specifically that's been around for a long time with the show. Residents of a French seaside resort are reeling as a cat serial killer has poisoned an astounding 200 cats in the town over the last month. Authorities in Saint-Pierre-la-Mire have been left baffled by the bizarre spate of deaths which have befallen both stray cats and pets as well as birds and rodents. Alarmed at the stunning number of victims, the animal welfare groups are calling for autopsies of the animals to attempt to determine what may have been used to poison them. A cat serial killer. I've got just a lady to send over there to figure this out. Well, here's a little information you might want to hear, or maybe not. When he was undergraduate at William & Mary's College, former FBI Director James Comey wrote his senior thesis, quote, "The Christian in Politics," unquote, on the theologian Reinhold Niebuhr. Remember him, the super-duper anti-national socialist? Comey had said since that Niebuhr's thoughts continues to influence him. Similar tributes to Niebuhr have come from Jimmy Carter, John McCain, and Barack Obama. That Niebuhr still gets mentioned by public speakers is not surprising. He was immensely influenced in public life himself, engaging in activity in both state, New York, and national politics. He even had a direct line to the White House during the Kennedy years. During that period, his writings were popular with folks who were not particularly religious. The journalist Walter Lippmann, an extreme progressive, for example, and the diplomat Dean Acheson, extreme progressive, indeed the designation of Niebuhr as the 21st century's greatest theologian actually came from the Harvard political historian Arthur Schlesinger Jr., extreme left-wing progressive, who was not known for any sort of religious commitments. Fuller Cemetery, Seminary, recently screened Martin Doblmeyer's new documentary, The American Conscience, the Reinhold Niebuhr story. Those of us who have admired Doblmeyer, highly acclaimed the 2003 film on Dietrich Bonhoeffer, the German theologian martyred in Hitler's National Socialist Germany, came with high expectations. We were not disappointed. The Niebuhr documentary is splendid, and we got to see it, not only with the Doblmeyer present to discuss it, but also with Hal Holbrook in the audience, another super liberal. He is Niebuhr's voice in the film. A number of present-day theologian quacks make their appearance in Doblmeyer's documentary, providing insightful commentary on Niebuhr's life and thought. For me, it was like taking a refresher course in Niebuhr. His influence in the theological and guild persists, but more often these days his name comes up in testimonies from the likes of Comey and Obama. You see where they get a lot of their brainwashing. One could argue that having an influence on public leaders more than on his theological colleagues was an intentional strategy on Niebuhr's part. Martin Marty has pointed out that while Niebuhr never completely abandoned his role as a church-based theologian, he gradually became much more focused on brainwashing politicians. This explains why Marty observes when Niebuhr was asked to name the greatest theologian in American history, his choice was Abraham Lincoln. That's a funny one. Not everyone in the scholarly community looked with favor on Niebuhr's influence in the broad public arena. In my own evangelical world, Niebuhr's secular reception was often been seen as a sign that he had undercut the essential supernatural grounding for theology. Supernatural, man. Spooks in the sky. But the criticism came from other quarters as well, as captured succinctly in a Harvard philosopher's derisive reference to Niebuhr's non-Christian admirers as atheists for Niebuhr. I pretty much side with Niebuhr in all this, at least in the kind of thing he was doing. I don't know if Abraham Lincoln deserves to be ranked higher than, say, Jonathan Edwards in the pantheon of American theologians, but Lincoln did use theological categories to speak effectively to the nation's soul in times of crisis. Well, these are all psychopaths, religious psychopaths, philosophical psychopaths, and so forth. And these guys, like Comey, sit at their knee and take all this shit in and then transfer it to their own methodology. Well, that's it for that. I'm just trying to show you how these so-called intellectuals brainwash these leaders that rule over you. I think for sure they're not reading Nietzsche or any of the National Socialist writers or anybody like that. Well, organizers announced Monday that the next stop on the much-anticipated sold-out white supremacist world tour will be the cozy college town of Charlottesville, Virginia. I'm reading this from an article, of course. The Washington Post reports that the loyal white knights of the Ku Klux Klan have applied for a permit to hold a rally in Charlottesville on July 8th. Another group of white nationalists who call themselves Unity and Security for America will sponsor the after party August 12th. After applying for a permit that the city officials say will likely be approved. After a contentious city council meeting Monday that included chants of fuck white supremacy, representatives from the city acknowledge that there is probably little they can do to stop the rallies. Charlottesville Director of Communications Miriam Dickler reminded everyone that people have a right to gather. People have a right, a constitutional right to assemble in accordance with their First Amendment rights. Yeah, right. They don't have a right to be heard, though. The Unity and Security for America gathering is being organized by Jason Kessler, a blogger so racist that he was fired from his job at the conservative website Daily Caller, which is akin to being kicked out of the skinheads for hating Jews a little too much. Kessler, one of the many butt-hurt white boys upset over the removal of the Confederate monuments, also believed in the bullshit premise of white genocide. Once writing, white people are rapidly becoming a minority in the U.S. and Europe. Well, the progressives brag about that. And adding, if we're not able to advocate for ourselves, we may go extinct. Which is true, even well-known intellectuals say that. But when we say it, or when our friends say it, it's silly. It's not true. Kessler, who applied for his gathering permit on May 30th and attended Monday's city council meeting, was so roundly jeered by those in audience that the meeting had to be suspended. You see, these are white people, mostly white people, that are doing this. So why do you want to go to any big lengths to save their ass? Most of those white people, I could care less whether the niggers rape them or not. I mean, I'm sorry, but that's just the way I feel about it. The town founded by Thomas Jefferson and home of the University of Virginia has become a battleground for people who oppose the removal of Confederate monuments. Well, how about removal of the white race? You just now catching on just because they're going to take a monument down? The city approved the removal of the statue of Robert E. Lee in 2012, but neo-fascists have lately made the statue a symbol of political correctness, gone mad because the white man's ego has lately became as fragile as his toehold at the top of America's social hierarchy. Well, that's for sure. Corey Stewart, a candidate for governor in Virginia, has also been a vocal advocate for protecting the statues. Not protecting white women or white men that are being raped and murdered on the street, but protecting statues. Statues! Even though he hails from Minnesota and has no ties to the Confederacy except for his whiteness. Well, that's the only thing that counts, Buster. Stewart has given speeches in front of the statue and often tweets about his masturbatory love for stone monuments of white supremacy. A lot of this stuff is deserved by the right wing. I mean, you know.
Call from 1-951-927.
On May 13th, a racist human micropenis. I love named Richard Spencer organized a group of fellow fuckboys to march to the statue wielding torches in a protest reminiscent of KKK cross-burning. Well, as far as I'm concerned, if you're going to do it, forget it. Go to the Martin Luther King statues and tear them down. Knock them over. Do whatever you want. But don't get caught. But don't get all excited about Robert E. Lee. He fucked up the Civil War at Gettysburg. And a lot of you people don't seem to understand that. He lost the Civil War at Gettysburg. And most of these guys, after the Civil War was over, they were all for bringing the blacks back in and giving them rights and all that kind of stuff. So their whiteness didn't last them too long. While the impromptu gathering was quickly dismissed by police, Charlottesville residents will get to see the real thing on July 8th when Bubba of the loyal white knights of Ku Klux Klan descend on their town. I'll bet they all a follower of Mr. Duke. While we have declined to make a single joke about why these white supremacist hucks ain't loyal, when Ticketmaster posts the link to purchase tour seats, we will definitely let you know. Boy, isn't that guy funny? That guy is a funny guy. Yeah. That was in the Washington Post, I guess. Michael Harriott. If you met him in a working class beer bar and got in his face, he'd probably piss his pants. Or maybe even shit his pants. Forget the name of that right wing singer that Trump invited to the White House and the left go crazy over. Forget his name. He's a musician. But anyhow, do you know that that guy, to avoid the draft, and I don't mind somebody wanting to avoid the draft, that he shit in his pants and sit in it for several days before he went into the draft board. Can you imagine that? He went that far to shit in his pants and sit in it for two or three days before he went to the draft board? True story. I forget his name. I'll remember it sooner or later. Here's a note from one of our subscribers. The following story may be rare, but I thought I would share it. My late uncle was drafted into the U.S. Army in World War II. He was at Normandy, the Bulge, and the rest of the duration. Ever since I was a young boy, he always expressed a strong hatred of Jews and blacks. He also said Adolf Hitler would have made a better president than FDR. He never said anything negative about Germans. He probably suffered from some form of PTSD, which he self-medicated with alcohol. Rest in peace, Uncle Kurt. I want to encourage you people out there to send me things like this, just small items and small articles, a few paragraphs or a page or whatever, half a page, and I'll put them on the radio show, because some of them have come in, they're pretty good. Most of them have been pretty good. Well, here goes the big box department stores. Like I've said before, Sears is closing 72 stores. Here's a full list. Sears is closing 72 more stores, in addition to more than 180 that have already been announced this year. The company released a list internally on Tuesday of the closing stores, which includes 16 Sears stores, 49 Kmart stores, and 7 audio centers. How about that? You're going to see the end of box stores for now, because they're going broke and the managers and controllers of these stores are just going to hand the keys over to the banks and let the banks eat it. So where are you going to go now, boys and girls? what are you going to do when you don't have Kmart or maybe Walmart? I don't know. Walmart's pretty strong. Goddamn mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, and I've got a picture of him here. He's a typical wog, brown-skinned, black eyes. I mean, the typical. And they made him the mayor of London. I don't have any sympathy for people who do make a guy like that the mayor of London. But now he's going after Trump. London Mayor Sadiq Khan said Monday that the United Kingdom shouldn't roll out the red carpet during President Trump's upcoming state visit, as the war of words between the two leaders keeps escalating. In an interview with Britain's Channel 4, Khan was asked if he thought Trump's visit to the UK, tentatively planned for the short in the fall, should be canceled in the wake of inflammatory comments he has made about immigration, and Khan followed Saturday's deadly terrorist attacks. Though he declined to answer directly, Khan nonetheless responded pointedly, drawing a sharp contrast between Trump's policies and the UK's. He's speaking for all the white people in the UK. This fucking wog, this Islamic piece of shit, fake mayor of London is speaking for the white people of Britain. And the white people of Britain, what are they doing about it? Are there any demonstrations or riots against this son of a bitch? No. Well, what the hell can I do for him? White people that cowardly, I guess, don't deserve to live. Here's this so-called ragheads. Quote, my position remains the same, Khan began. I don't think we should be rolling out the carpet to the white president of the USA in the circumstances where his policies go against everything we stand for, all us Muslims. Quote, I think one of the things when you have a special relationship is no different than when you've got a close mate, he continued. You stand with them in times of adversity, but you call them out when they're wrong, and there are many things about which Donald Trump is wrong. Well, I agree with that, but not for that reason. So you simple little wog, you're going to ride high because everybody's afraid to call you a stupid little raghead. What can you do for people like this, boys and girls? What the fuck can you do for people like white people like this? Well, that's it for today. And this is the 7th. I forgot to tell you. I know you didn't know, but this is June the 7th, 2017. And I'll be back tomorrow, which will be Thursday. That's right. Hang in there, boys and girls. It's going to get worse. Worse is better. I'm afraid so, but that's what we got to go through before it can get better, if it can get better. Don't forget to send your donations in here. We got to pay our bills. Not my personal bills. The situation, we got a website to pay for and a lot of things, little things around here to pay for. You don't have to send a lot of money, but send some money. Don't wait till the end of the month. The bills come in the first of the month. This song is dedicated to the Khan, Mayor of London. Enjoy.
Let me tell you about Ahab, the Arab, the sheik of the burning sands. He had emeralds and rubies just a-dripping off of him, and a ring on every finger of his hand. He wore a big old turban wrapped around his head and a scimitar by his side. And every evening about midnight, he'd jump on his camel named Clyde and ride silently through the night to the Sultan's tent, where he would secretly meet up with Fatima of the Seven Veils, the swingin'est number one dancer in the Sultan's whole harem. 'Cause like him and her had a thing going, you know, and they've been carrying on for some time now behind the Sultan's back. And you could hear him talk to his camel as he rode out across the dunes. His voice would cut through the still night desert air, and he'd say, oh, yo! Which is Aramaic for whoa, babies. And Clyde say, well, he brought his camel to a screeching halt in the rear of Fatima's tent. Jumped off Clyde, snuck around the corner and into the tent, and he went. There he saw Fatima laying on a zebra skin rug, with rings on her fingers and bells on her toes and a bone in her nose, ho, ho. There she was, friends and neighbors laying there in all her radiant beauty, eating on a raisin and a grape and an apricot and a pomegranate, a bowl of chitlings, two bananas, three Hershey bars, and sipping on an ROC Coke, listening to her transistor, watching the Grand Ole Opry, and reading Mad Magazine while she sung, "Does your chewing gum lose its flavor?" And Ahab walk up to her and he say, "Oh yeah, 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 oh 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 yeah." Which is Aramaic for, "Let's twist again like we did last summer, baby." And she say, "Crazy, baby." All of a sudden the sultan walked in. Ahab knew that this was the end. Him and Fatima was caught by surprise, and the sultan had fire flashing out of his eyes. Well, the sultan charged at Ahab, intending to make a dent in his head. But he fled with Fatima, and out of the tent they went. They jumped on Clyde and started to ride, cutting out across the sand with the sultan's whole army in hot pursuit. On and on they ran. Well, to make the long story short, they got away, cause there wasn't no animal alive what could keep up with Clyde once he got started, cause he would have swift his steed on the old desert babies. And they made it across the border where Ahab hopped all his rubies and emeralds, and they bought him a swanging little split-level pad and lived happy ever after. Yeah, and that's the story about Ahab, the Arab, the Sheik of the Burning Sands.
And don't forget, it takes two bricks to jumpstart a camel.